Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Week 9 Take the Points podcast. Live from Hartford, Connecticut, I am Tom Zalesnok, and live via Skype from Phoenix, Arizona.
Yeah!
There it is. Cue it up for you. Dan Partridge.
Woo!
Guess who's back?
Yeah.
All right. Trying to get sued for copyright infringement.
Frill.
Dan Partridge back after a 2-week hiatus.
Sorry, everybody. I don't know what happened. I don't know. Work, it just got a little crazy. Thanks to Ryan for filling in there for me. I'm really sorry. Of course, I would leave for 2 weeks and had my most amazing 2-week run like ever. But we'll see if we can continue it here. I'm feeling pretty good and loose, and I feel like I got a really good hold on college football now. I'm ready to roll the rest of the year.
So, Dan, let's talk about some of the things that have happened in the last 2 weeks while you were out, especially this past weekend. Most podcasts, most smart people would start with FSU Notre Dame, but we want to start with a different team, which is Ole Miss.
Ole Miss is unbelievable, as you've heard all year here on this podcast. There's so many reasons to like Ole Miss this year. One, they get a senior quarterback, which is just so important and underrated, especially in these crazy SEC road games, which have been super intense, all year, which they are every year. I don't know if it's just 2014 being extra crazy or just like because I've been like really into them this year, but all the SEC games have been amazing.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say that it's your fandom did not affect the SEC West. I think it's just
true.
A crazy year. Everything lined up right. I mean, you've got upperclassmen leaders like Prescott and Wallace coming of age at the right time when Alabama and Auburn are both great. LSU's LSU. We'll get to them in a little bit. But all of these teams are sort of reaching a program peak at the right time.
Absolutely. You're right.
So any thoughts on Mississippi State, Florida State, any of the other, undefeated top teams?
Mississippi State appears to be really, really good, and they, obviously are. I would say that it was a very odd game that they played against Auburn 2 weeks ago. I think those teams are exactly even. I think Auburn's slightly better. It was a weird opening to the game. Mississippi State jumped out to a lead. Auburn kept moving down the field and then missed a short field goal, settled for two other field goals. There was that crazy thunderstorm, and still Auburn was in the game. Horrible pass interference call. It was a weird game, and I would still hold off on assuming Mississippi State's going to run the table. But I still think Ole Miss is the best team in the country, and I think that they are, overall number one, and Auburn two right now.
Yeah, people are really premature with all their picks all the time, but especially with this this declaration that the Egg Bowl is going to be for this like undefeated record and top playoff spot. I mean, I've looked at the schedule, and I do think the Egg Bowl is going to be very important. Definitely going to determine at least one New Year's Six Bowl. Probably a good chance that one of the teams will get into the playoff, but certainly no guarantee on that. And I would urge people to wait and see. Auburn will be back, I'm sure of it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. No doubt.
All right. So, Dan, Florida State, Notre Dame, start with the big call at the end. What are your thoughts?
I think it was the correct call, and I was happy that they made the call. I hate that play. The fucking New England Patriots used to do it with Wes Welker all the time. Drew me, made me crazy. And I think you have to throw the flag there because if not, it's obviously offensive pass interference. So I was okay with the call. I also had Notre Dame plus the points. Not that it really mattered, but I was okay with it. I think it was an excellent game. Those teams are very even. Be interesting to see how it plays out the rest of the year for both to see if one, if not both, are in the playoff.
Yeah, a couple things about that game. I thought, first off, the quarterback play was about as good as you're going to see in college football, at least this year. Jameis Winston really was the team. I mean, Florida State was struggling, and he brought them back almost single-handedly in the second half. Everett Golson, on the other side, is a great college quarterback. Now, you know, he might not be a great pro. He might never even get a shot in the pros. But I was thinking about the Heisman, and basically it's supposed to be an MVP award, right?
Yes.
Besides maybe Dak Prescott, is there anyone who's more valuable to their team, you know, that their team would go from 7-5, which they were, I think, with Tommy Rees, and not very good, you know, the definition of mediocre, to a team with Golson that made the national title game, and then when he comes back, they're competing with Florida State, and, you know, they're a top five team, and a lot of people still think they'll make a playoff.
Yeah, absolutely. He is very valuable. He's valuable. Marcus Mariota's extremely valuable. Jameis Winston's valuable. And Mississippi State's quarterback Prescott, I think, are the four who, if you take them away from their teams lose like four or five more games throughout the course of the year.
How about Bryce Petty? He on that list?
No. No, because they've had an unbelievable offense every year, whether it's RG3, Nick Florence, well, still threw for 400. That guy showed up out of nowhere. And now Bryce Petty, I don't think there's that much fall off.
Where is Nick Florence now? Does anybody know?
Probably playing like NFL Europe, lighting it up.
He could be the XFL or the NFL Europe. I mean, Danny Werfel and JP Losman were the two biggest stars in those leagues. So I think Nick Florence could do pretty well.
Ooh, sorry.
Something I wanted to say about the final play, you know, the big call. I was looking through websites on Monday, and I saw different websites. One would say, you know, here is absolute evidence that Notre Dame's receivers set a pick. And then I'd see another one that said the opposite. You know, here is definitive proof that the refs got the call wrong. They were showing the exact same clips. So wow. It's just one of those things that no matter, you know, if you like one of the teams, you're never going to be convinced that your team didn't get screwed.
Wow.
You know, if you like Notre Dame, they got screwed. If you like Florida State, it was absolutely the right call. And if you're neutral like I am, I think it's hard to argue. The thing that I think is upsetting to most neutral fans is that Notre Dame kind of outplayed Florida State most of the game. So to lose in that way is very difficult. And especially on a call like that, it's the right call, but I hate to see it be a 15-yard penalty where they go back to 4th-and-17, and the game's essentially over. Even though they have another play, there's really no chance of that working.
Yeah, I don't know. I was okay with it, like I said.
You're a big hockey fan. Do you think that football should embrace the hockey spirit of, you know, we don't call anything in the last minute? Or should it be more like basketball where it's, you know, you call it the same way in the first minute as you do in the final minute?
I kind of like it like the NBA with football because, like, especially with the, you know, offensive and defensive pass interference, it's a huge change of the game, you know, and, like, holding penalties, too, and stuff like that. So I like when they call it the same all the way through.
Well, moving along, I don't really have anything else from last weekend. I don't think there's much worth noting. I have a few different random news and notes, I would say, so let me go through them and you can add your thoughts. And if you have anything else, feel free to add it.
That's good.
First off, the SEC East. I don't know what's up with them. Georgia has a really impressive win once again. You and I both know that they're kind of fake.
Yes.
They will be exposed. Georgia looks good now. They remind me of, you know, the Quest Chat commercials that are on at like 2 a.m. where it's some good looking girls like, call me and have a good time.
Yes.
You're watching that, you're like,
You know those calls well.
Interesting. But you know when if you actually were to call that number, it's like some 52-year-old dude in a dress. That's Georgia to me. Like, they're looking really good right now, but I know that once you finally look into them and they're exposed by a better team, we're going to realize that they're just another, you know, 12th place, 15th place team.
Mark Richt will show up eventually.
I don't think my analogy was any good, but the point is Georgia's overrated.
I liked it.
Florida we'll get to later. Kentucky, man, I thought they were an up-and-coming program. I thought they were going to hang with LSU. They got blown the fuck out.
Yep.
They're just not that good, huh? We had them overrated in a poor SEC East?
Absolutely correct.
Okay. I mean, I know LSU's a tough team to play, but that was really bad. And then Tennessee, although Ole Miss, we started the show saying how great they are, Tennessee put in a pretty lackluster performance in that game. So they're not too good either.
No, bad, very bad.
All right, moving on. Oklahoma. A lot of people are going to say that their kicker sucks. What I want to say to people is that he's a young kid. He's not a professional. It's one thing when an NFL kicker misses a few kicks in a game, but a college kid, I'm sure he feels bad enough already, and I hope that fans just, you know, leave him alone. Don't harass him.
That's fair.
It's hard when you're a big program and you're just a diehard Oklahoma fan. You want to say, fuck that guy, he cost us the game, but you have to remember that they are kids, and especially a kicker. I mean, kickers actually go to class and stuff, so I would not hold it against him.
It's not his fault, no. Oklahoma is overrated to begin the year. We talked about it. They already have two losses. They're an average team. They were never a national title contender, never in a million years.
Right, and much like with Notre Dame, although one play seemingly loses you the game, no game is ever really won or lost on one play. So they had a million other chances where they could have scored or shut down Kansas State or whatever.
Inexcusable to lose to Kansas State at home.
Okay, Indiana. This is the most we need to talk about Indiana the rest of the year.
I hope so.
Without quarterback Nate Sudfeld, who is out for the year, they are complete garbage. And I would urge people to bet against them for the rest of the year because they are going to be horrible.
Okay, thanks for the tip.
No problem. Check back next week when the new quarterback throws for like 700 yards and then I apologize.
Most likely.
And then the last thing I want to say, the top four polls. Where do you stand on every analyst releasing a top four playoff poll every week?
It is overkill. It will all play itself out. I am not concerned. I think it's going to be fine. It's just, I'm tired of everyone talking about it. Just, there's so many like insanely key games left, like the Iron Bowl, the Egg Bowl, like all those other SEC matchups. Can Oregon run the table? Like, can Florida State just keep on winning without screwing up one game because they're going to mail it in? Like, there's so many little things. So make sure all those things play out. Come after Thanksgiving, no problem. We'll be able to figure this out.
Okay, I'm glad we're on the same page. Even though we haven't talked in a couple weeks, that is exactly how I feel. And the reason I bring it up is because when the committee releases their top four, it's going to get 10 times worse, all the over-analysis. So,
yeah, bad, real bad.
Yeah, I'm reaching the point, which is what I do with NFL now, where I just have to tune it out for about half the week because it's total overkill. So I hope that people learn and tone it down a little bit so that we can enjoy college football all week long.
I agree.
Dan, before we get into the real games, you have a little bit of a gambling tip, and it involves our good friends at UConn.
Our friends of UConn, as we expected. Well, not, I don't know if we expected it to be this bad.
No, Dan, let me remind the listeners that you and I made a bet at the beginning of the season on who would win more games, Syracuse or UConn. Our prediction was 6 for Syracuse and 5 for UConn.
Okay, here's the deal. UConn's the only FBS team in the entire country to be 0-4 the entire year against the spread. There are some other winless teams, but there are no have-not-covered-a-game-yet team. They are absolutely horrible. They scored 3 points at Tulane. They lost to the Temple Owls like 31-10, and that's with a late touchdown to make it 31-10. They're the worst team I've ever seen in college football. That's not an exaggeration.
Wait, so what you're saying is when they beat Stony Brook 19-16, that did not cover the spread?
There is no spread because Stony Brook is like basically like kids who got like okay grades but wanted to play college football so though they didn't have to take out student loans.
Stony Brook is just their lacrosse team. It's something for them to do in the fall.
I think it is. It's pretty lame.
Pretty much the same pads and equipment, so they just said fuck it.
Unbelievable. So yeah, there you go.
So UConn 0-6, big spread this week, Thursday night, 28 points against East Carolina.
I can't lay the 28 fast enough. In fact, I've already laid the 28. How the hell? Dude, okay, first of all, this is East Carolina's chance on national TV to show off, which is not good for UConn. They're going to score all the time. UConn can't move the ball. Like, if you take UConn here in 28, it's going to be the worst night of your life. You're gonna be watching this in pain. I love East Carolina. It's probably my favorite bet. Is there the first or second favorite bet of the whole week?
Thursday night lineup, Dan, includes Connecticut at East Carolina and Miami, who cannot move the ball and has no fans, at the boring-ass Virginia Tech. Do you just avoid TV on that night or what?
Yeah, I'll watch the NFL game on Thursday night, actually. That's exactly what I'm going to do.
Okay. Now, Ole Miss, 7-0 against the spread.
Yep, undefeated.
I guess we could have saved that for later, but while we're talking about against the spread, Ole Miss, yep, undefeated.
See, I keep telling people, just take Ole Miss every week and no one listens to me. 7-0, ATS, that is a super powerful team. They aren't just winning every game, they're covering the spread. That is amazing. Amazing.
Yeah, see, this is what we miss when you're gone, Dan. I can talk about games and teams, but nobody brings the gambling knowledge quite like you. All right, so
it's so impressive to cover every single game. Like, I can't say how hard that is, especially since they're laying points every week. It's not that they're winning, it's that they're exceeding expectations by guys who have millions of dollars on the line to come up with a number. You know what I mean? Like, very impressive, very impressive.
What is more remarkable, or what surprises you more, that a team could go undefeated against the spread like Ole Miss, or that a team could go 0-for against the spread like UConn? Because that's a challenge also.
It is a challenge either way. I think it's harder for Ole Miss because as they keep covering and people are making more money, I think Vegas makes it harder for them, and they've actually inflated the lines. Like, dude, for instance, last week they opened at like – all right, they were home against – who were they home against?
Tennessee.
Tennessee, yeah. That game opened at 19.5 or 20, and it instantly just kept going down. And by kickoff, it was like 14.5.
Yeah, I got it at 16, which was great.
Great, yeah. Easiest ever, 34-3, never in doubt.
That was a rare double-up win for me. I got the under and the 16-point line, which, by the way, yeah, the under was only about 46, so to win by over 16 and still be under, that's kind of an impressive feat. Not good for Tennessee.
It is impressive, and it's going to happen again this week.
All right, well, we will get to that one, but first, we have a Friday game. It's Oregon.
Yes.
I always pronounce it two ways on every podcast. They are minus 17.5. They are at Cal. And Dan, before we have a pick, you actually have a California story for us involving one member of the league, the TV show.
Nick Kroll. Okay, so my sister got married last summer, and her friend from LA shows up, and they're like, you know, they've known each other since Michigan, and she was the maid of honor in my sister's wedding, and so she comes, but her fiance at the time couldn't make it. I'm like, oh, whatever. Fast forward to this summer, she gets married in L.A. My sister and her husband fly out for the wedding, fall in love with California, etc. They go out to eat at a Mexican restaurant, and it's my sister, her fiancé, and then her friend, and her fiancé, now husband. And in walks Nick Kroll with the other person on the show who he does the, I don't know what her name, but she's on a bunch of different skits. And they're pretty much high as a kite. Not my sister and friends, but Nick Kroll and company, which he always is. And my sister goes, oh my God, it's Nick Kroll. And the fiance who was getting married was like, oh yeah, hold on. And he goes over to the table and says, and starts talking to him. And my sister's like, what the hell is going on? And I can't believe you're talking to Nick Kroll. And she's like, oh, that's because he works for Nick Kroll. He works on his Comedy Central show, The Kroll Show, and he does, like, the, I don't know, something to do with the camera lighting or something like that. Mm-hmm. And he says hello, and he pops his head around the corner to my sister and her fiance and says, hi, I'm Nick. And so there you go. And the reason he couldn't come to the wedding last summer is he was filming season two of The Kroll Show, which is my favorite show in the whole world. And I think it's so cool my sister got to say hi to Nick Kroll, and it's so cool that we kind of know someone who works on that show. Like, for all the people who don't watch Kroll Show, I think it's the best show like in a long time, 10 years. It's genius.
Wow. That's strong. I've seen it only once or twice, so I can't really say. I love him on the league. I love everyone on the league.
You are missing out. Go to Hulu or whatever the hell you need to and start watching it. It's reoccurring characters. It's genius comedy. It's just so smart, and I love it. And for me, that's just like the equivalent for you of like someone working on like Seinfeld or Curb Your Enthusiasm or something like that. Like if like, oh yeah, I ran into Larry David, you'd be like, what?
That is part of the problem, Dan, actually, because I watch Seinfeld pretty much every night still, like now, in 2014. So whereas I could be indulging in some new shows or learning something from this century, I prefer to just stay in the 90s.
George Costanza, that's all you need. And also, speaking of the Seinfeld creator and Curb star Larry David, my sister, while living in New York City, ran into Larry David once, so there you go.
See, that would I've seen celebrities before. I've met them. I don't get really like starstruck or whatever you want to call it. But Larry David, I think I would lose it a little bit. He'd be one of the few.
He's the one of the coolest guys ever.
I agree. All right. Larry David -17.5 at Cal.
Lay it with Oregon. They are rolling again and starting to blow people out on the reg.
Offensive linemen, Dan. They play a huge role and they get no credit.
That is true.
So I forget the guy's name. It's Nick something, but he's back. And since he's come back for Oregon, they've been blowing people out after a unfortunate loss to Arizona.
Yeah.
But besides that game and besides when they've had some injuries, they're looking like maybe one of the four best teams in the country.
I agree. I think Oregon may win out and make that last playoff spot.
I think there's a good chance. At Cal is tough. On a Friday night, Friday night games are always weird. I feel like the students or the student athletes are just waiting to go party and finish off the game.
Yeah, that seems
so I would look for a first half line in this personally.
Okay, that's a good idea. I will look for that.
You're looking at probably, what, 10.5? I think that's very, very doable.
Yeah, okay, it's fair.
All right, any other notes on celebrities or Friday night games or recaps or anything before we get into the big lines?
No, I think we're good. I think I'm ready to hit the Saturday lines, hit them hard.
Okay, I'm going to shuffle my papers around.
Good, I like that. Here. Letterman style right there. That's like David Letterman 101. You got to shuffle papers right next to the microphone.
Oh, yeah, Dan, before we get into the lines, what are your thoughts on every college mascot doing the Taylor Swift Shake It Off dance?
I'm okay with it. I'm so old that if these kids like it, fair enough.
One thing you said that you've said many things over the course of our lives that I relish and think is great advice. But one of the things I remember from you is it must have been like 2006 or 7, and one of you and I, our least favorite bands of all time, Nickelback, came out with a song called Photograph. And I just remember all the countless hours we spent talking about stuff that came out while we were in college. Like, why are these guys big? They're horrible. Why are, why does nobody like Interpol? And meanwhile, Nickelback's the biggest band on earth.
Yeah.
And then this Photograph song came out, which was by far the worst Nickelback song ever. Like it was almost like an Onion parody of a song. And I was like, Dan, I got to hear what you think about this horrible Photograph song. And you just go, I just can't do it anymore. I just don't have the energy to hate Nickelback. It takes too much. And I was like, I listened to Photograph again. I was like, yeah, I can't. Why am I bothering hating this stuff? Like, it just takes too much energy.
It's so horrible that, like, I mean, everyone should know. And if they don't know, then you're just finished. So what's it matter?
iPods have to be, you know, the whole iPod, iPhone culture. It's great for everyone on earth. But for people like me and you especially, it's been a godsend. Not having to just listen to whatever's on the radio or whatever's on the TV.
Yeah, exactly. Thank God for modern technology for music. It's the only thing that keeps me happy all the time.
Yeah, and now we've gotten to a point where I don't even know like who any people are on the radio. I was just actually, we're filming this Wednesday night. It's like 9:20 right now, but I turned on before we were doing this the beginning of the World Series game, And there was some dude who I guess was on American Idol. I had no clue who he was, but he started playing acoustic guitar and singing the national anthem. And it was really bad. And I was very vindicated to hear the, where are they, Kansas City for tonight's game?
Yes, they are.
So like, as soon as he was done, Kansas City fans just started letting out a huge chorus of boos. And then the boos sort of transitioned into cheering as the game was about to start. But it's probably, it's too soon to get it, but I'm going to grab that clip at some point, and that's going to be our new official end to take the points, I think. The booing transitioning into clapping. It's fantastic. Nice. Sums up what we do here.
I'm on board.
All right. Big Ten. We're going to start conference by conference. We're going to start with the Big Ten. Maryland at Wisconsin. Wisconsin's favored by 11.5. Tanner McAvoy will be taking a lot more snaps this week. I think Wisconsin, everybody who likes Wisconsin, and I believe the coaches as well, are aware that they have a horrible quarterback situation. And for that reason, I will not be able to bet on them for the rest of the year.
But I agree.
Maryland, I wouldn't take Maryland either. So I think Wisconsin's just going to be on the no-fly zone for the rest of the year for me.
I think that's fair. It's just a horrible game. Just stay away.
Yeah, Wisconsin's got a good team, and Melvin Gordon's probably going to be one of those five guys in New York for the Heisman. So they just have to get a quarterback. I mean, look at the one year they had a good quarterback, Russell Wilson. They're awesome. Yeah. Every other year they just have a stiff white guy who's 6'3", and, you know, they finish with 9-3. So
exactly. You're right on.
There's your answer. All right, Dan. Doris Burke, game of the week.
Yes, my girlfriend.
Rutgers at Nebraska. Nebraska favored by 17.5. Now, I found out some interesting news this week. I'm not sure. I wasn't able to confirm this. Maybe you know. Is it true that Doris Burke doesn't do college football anymore?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
I think she's done.
Well, then we're doing this in her memory then, I guess.
Well, here's the thing. Way, so you'll laugh about this. So how I found this out is I followed Doris Burke on Twitter, of course, and somebody wrote, you know how you don't write to somebody, but you just sort of tag them. So you're sort of writing to them. I mean, the guy was kind of being a dick, but he said, can't wait for Doris Burke to ruin the whatever game this weekend, Iowa game this weekend. Doris Burke wrote back, I don't do college football, or I don't do football, which I assume means she's moved on to only basketball. And so the guy wrote back to her, thank God, in all caps.
Okay, I have two or three accounts with Twitter I haven't told you all the names of.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that might be me. I'm just letting you know.
So I searched Doris Burke on Twitter after that because I was interested in other people's thoughts. And every other tweet, there's a lot of tweets about Doris Burke, by the way. Every other one says, blank person is the Doris Burke of blank activity or sport. So, for example, Pam Oliver is the Doris Burke of the NFL.
Awesome. I love it.
Things like that. I'm going to start using that, I think, in other facets, like, you know, running for president. Whoever runs for president, like Hillary Clinton is the Doris Burke of politicians.
She is.
And maybe even at work. You're being a real Doris Burke right now.
Okay. I'm going to try to do that.
I mean by that is that they're being a strong woman who is groundbreaking in their occupation.
Yeah, there's a lot of them hanging around my workplace. A lot of Doris Burks in the house.
So yeah, I found a possible replacement if we need to move on from Doris Burke. Her name is Beth Mowins.
Mm-hmm.
She is a Cicero North Syracuse grad, Dan, who is in the
boy.
Greater Syracuse Sports Hall of Fame. She was the second woman to ever announce college football for ESPN behind the great Burke. And I guess she has taken over doing like ESPN news games or something like that. So I present to you the Beth Mowins game of the week. I like Rutgers to cover. I think 17.5 is too much for Nebraska. Dan is shaking his head, but I don't believe in Nebraska. Their quarterback can't throw as per usual with Nebraska. And Rutgers has a solid defense, and I just don't think they can cover an 18-point spread.
I made some money last week off of this team, off of Mr. Abdul and company, and I'm gonna say that this is actually an underrated team. Lay it confidently. I think they're gonna beat the shit out of Rutgers and run it up.
Wait, underrated? Explain yourself.
I think that they're a top maybe 12 to 15 team.
You don't think they're one dimensional?
Even if they are, they're really good at what they do.
Okay.
I kind of like Nebraska this year, and dude, I can't stand them. Yeah, I mean, as you know, it's a program, but
right.
Whatever.
I'll never forgive them for the infamous 94 season where Penn State got screwed out of first place.
That wasn't cool.
Okay. The reason for the BCS, actually. So thank you, Nebraska, for the BCS, and then that was so bad that eventually we got the playoffs. So really, Tommy Frazier is the reason we have a playoff.
Yeah, Tommy Frazier, my favorite.
And Lawrence Phillips, too. Let's see. Okay, Dan, here's a big game in name. Michigan at Michigan State. Another 17.5 point line. Devin Gardner not playing very well this season. Brady Hoke on his way out.
Yep.
Michigan State, a very good team, but they seem to me to be sleepwalking just a little bit.
Yeah, this is a weird one. This is either going to be an absolute woodshed Michigan State victory or some close Michigan-on-Michigan rivalry action where you want to take the points. So, I don't know. Like, part of me thinks Michigan State's going to beat them like 49 to, like, you know, out low, like 7 or 3 or something, but it's a hard game. I'm probably not even going to put anything on. I'll probably stay away, unfortunately.
To me, this game comes down, where you bet comes down to one crucial question. Have the Michigan players completely given up on Brady Hoke?
Yeah.
All right, then it's Michigan State.
Fair enough, I like it.
All right, Dan. Our favorite childhood team, the Penn State Nittany Lions, they host the up-and-coming Ohio State team. Ohio State's a 14-point favorite. I'm going to let you start this one, and then I have some thoughts.
I think Penn State's horrible. I think Urban Meyer's an asshole, and I think that he's going to try to run it up, and I like Ohio State to murder Penn State this week.
All right, Dan, you know I've been a Penn State fan for 33 years. They're my team. This game is my lock of the week.
Me too.
Ohio State is going to destroy Penn State at home. Ohio State is secretly very good. JT Barrett can play. They can win the Big Ten. They are not out of it. They are going to make a New Year's Six Bowl. And maybe they're not going to deserve it as much as some teams that miss out. For example, like an Alabama or a, you know, Mississippi State. One of those SEC West teams will be cut out of the New Year's Six and they'll be better than Ohio State. But because of schedule, because of the rabid fan base, and because they're really starting to put it together, and Urban Meyer's a great coach, Ohio State is going to lose at most one more game this season. And they will be in a New Year's Six Bowl, and they're going to destroy Penn State, as much as I hate to say it.
I agree. I love Ohio State this week to murder Penn State.
Yeah, and if you do this, you know, Penn State, I assume they're going to have a whiteout or something like that. And the fans are going to be crazy as they always are. So this game's going to be close for a quarter or maybe two. If you bet on Ohio State, do not lose hope. Because eventually their talent level, the talent disparity is going to come through.
You're right.
Two more years, Penn State will be back. Two more years. Just got to keep saying that. All right, Dan, I want to go on to the SEC now. Usually we save them for the end, but we've got some other compelling conferences this week. So here is another one I like a lot. This is UAB coming to Arkansas, 23.5 point line. I think Arkansas is bad by SEC West standards, but compared to UAB, I think they're really good, and I think it's going to be a woodshed.
It very well could be. The only thing I'm worried about is Arkansas has played a couple SEC teams in a row who are very physical, and they might be a little bit worn down. But I would still side with you and lean Arkansas. I'm not a huge fan of it, but I would never take UAB in this spot.
My feeling is that much like, you know, the big brother beats on the little brother, and then the little brother beats on the dog, Arkansas has been tossed around by Alabama and some of the other better teams, and now they get a chance to just go out and dominate someone, and they're not going to get this chance the rest of the season. So I think they'll look at it as like, this is our one chance to just kick the shit out of somebody.
Fair enough.
So that's what I'm banking on.
Okay.
Similarly, we've got Mississippi State minus 14 at Kentucky. On paper, they should blow them out. I don't know who Mississippi State's got coming up, though. I assume they've got a really challenging schedule and perhaps a look-ahead game.
It's very possible. Give me 2 seconds. I'm actually on it right now. Next week, Mississippi State has Arkansas at home. Okay, so it's not a look-ahead game. That means I like Mississippi State a little bit more. I'll definitely bet Mississippi State in this game now that I know they have Arkansas next week.
As mentioned previously in this podcast, Kentucky, I thought they were good. I thought they were up and coming. I thought Mark Stoops should be the next Michigan coach. I've changed my mind on all of it, Dan. I don't know what to believe.
Yeah, they're very bad.
Yeah, Mississippi State's going to win this game.
Yes, big time.
All right, another SEC mismatch. We've got Vandy at Missouri. The line is somewhere around 21, 21 and a half. I actually kind of liked it when it opened at 21. I'm always a little more skeptical with the half point because now you're talking about four scores.
Yeah.
If I had to choose, definitely Missouri. No way I would take Vandy.
Yeah.
But I would look for it if you can. Yeah, that's a lot of points. I would see if you could get it to creep down a little.
Matty Mox looked horrible in a lot of games this year. I would stay away. That is a trash game.
He scored 42 against Florida's stifling defense and Will Muschamp.
He didn't score 42. There was a pick six and a fumble recovery and a punt return for a touchdown. So it was all fluke plays. They're not good either. I like in that game is an under.
Are you disappointed in Mocktober? Not going too well?
It's going very bad.
Let's see what we got for the over-under. 45. Low.
Yeah, that sounds about right. No one's going to score.
Vandy's good for about 6.
21-6.
All right, Dan, I'm leaving this one to you. Ole Miss minus 4 at LSU. Night game. Shocking night game in LSU.
I know. Well, here. I'm a man who likes math, and math tells me that Ole Miss has covered every single game this year. Therefore, you have to bet Ole Miss until further notice. Look, people think that LSU is all of a sudden like really good. No, they beat Kentucky. Kentucky, dude. Like, who cares? It's a complete joke. But Ole Miss has a really hard schedule. Keep in mind that. After the LSU game, they're home against Auburn, which is a massive game, but they'll still show up for LSU because they've showed up every game this year. They're just unbelievable, and I love Ole Miss, and lay it and root hard on Saturday night.
LSU's 6-2, Dan. Their two losses come to Mississippi State, who's number 1, and Auburn, who's number 5. Is it possible they could be good?
No. I don't think they have the quarterback play. I don't think their defense is that strong. I think they'll be exposed against Ole Miss, and after this game, you'll see.
Les Miles gave an interview, I think it was yesterday, and they asked him about the quarterback play for next year, and his response was great. It was, oh shit, we got to play that position next year too?
He's hilarious. I love that guy.
He's really funny. The sad thing is, I can't believe that nobody's asked him about the quarterback play before. Not just this season, but, you know, basically since about 04 is the last time they had somebody decent.
I know. It's getting really stupid at this point.
He's got to hire a guy who just recruits quarterbacks, basically. I'm surprised that Phil Rivers' brother never really started or panned out.
I know. Fair enough. That's a good point.
You would think. Sometimes the genes throw you off. You know, you hear the name Rivers or you hear the name Montana, and turns out it's Nick Montana. Not quite the same.
He's horrible.
South Carolina at Auburn, Dan. 18.5.
South Carolina is also not good. But this is very similar to last week's Ole Miss-Tennessee game. Will Auburn be focused? Yes, because they had last week off, and this is a tune-up for Ole Miss. They're going to smash South Carolina. But in this game, I would not lay the points. However, the over is a stone lock. Fire that over all day.
65.
Oh, yeah. Auburn's going to score almost that by themselves.
Don't you think Auburn will come out, you know, they're sort of, are they coming off a loss? They didn't have a game last week, correct?
Nope.
So they're coming off a loss. I mean, I would think they've got something to prove.
Yeah, they're going to smash.
And South Carolina's not good by South Carolina standards, but they're still an SEC team, albeit SEC East. I think it's going to be close for a half, and then Auburn's going to pull away. So I would take the points, or lay the points rather, and I would look at the second half. If it's a close game going into halftime, I would look at the second half line. If you can get Auburn, you know, at a touchdown or so, I would take that.
I agree.
What's with all the SEC lines being double digits this week? We've got Alabama at Tennessee, Tennessee plus 18.
Because all the powerhouse SEC teams keep covering. It's really that simple. What do you think, like, Mississippi State, Ole Miss, Auburn, and Alabama this year, like, are combined against the spread, like, 22-7 or something stupid like that? Like, Vegas is tired of losing money, so they're going to jack up those spreads until the other teams start covering. Standard.
Right. It's actually, I guess, it's pretty easy. It's East versus West in all of these games. The one game that's West versus West is 4 points.
There you go.
So Alabama at Tennessee, 18 points. I really don't like it, but again, I don't know if I trust Tennessee. I wouldn't feel good wagering on Tennessee this season based on how they've performed. But yeah. 18 is too much for me, so I'm not betting on that game.
Over.
Over? Let's see. Oh, 46.5.
Yeah, Alabama might score that themselves.
Okay. Then over. Wouldn't they cover the 18 if that were to happen?
Yes, but it could be a weird game. That, like, I don't know, but I just like the over more. I mean, you can win that. You know, Alabama might win, like, 31-17. That's okay. Over, you know, something like that.
All right, let's hold off on the Big 12 for just a minute because that's, to me, the most interesting conference this week. Let's go to the least interesting conference, the ACC.
Awful.
Although becoming very interesting in the last few hours. Now, again, we're taping this on Wednesday. I didn't really know about the North Carolina scandal until a few minutes before we started taping, so I don't really know the details. Apparently, they've had this 18-year cheating ring that affected 3,000 athletes. Yeah. Sounds crazy. Slightly worse than what we did in AP history, or AP science, I mean.
I'm okay with the cheating ring. I really couldn't care less.
This is coming from two guys who would reprogram their TI-82 graphing calculators so that they can include the answers to AP physics test.
It's true. I know, seriously. I mean, come on. Who cares about these guys cheating on tests? Those guys were there to play sports. Like, it doesn't mean anything. Who gives a shit?
North Carolina football, though, Dan. I mean, they send some guys to the pros, but it's not a sure bet.
They send a lot of guys to the pros, but somehow they're a mess in college football. Think of all the pros they've sent. It's crazy. Giovanni Bernard, Keem Nix, Robert Quinn, all those other defensive guys. Like
Julius Peppers.
It's crazy. And, you know, whatever.
I think we're starting to get an idea of why they don't succeed as well as they should. Yeah, maybe it's the way the program is run.
Yeah, whatever.
Larry Fedora is not ruling with an iron fist, it appears.
No, not so much.
All right, so my notes, which I wrote yesterday, said that if you can get 7 points in the ACC Coastal, take it every time. You're getting 7 points with North Carolina at Virginia. I don't know if the scandal will have any effect on the game itself. I suspect not. So,
take points.
Yeah, take the points, but wait and see what comes out in the next couple days and how bad it is, suspensions and whatnot. If North Carolina's at full strength for the game, take the points.
That's fair.
Then you've got Georgia Tech at Pitt -4. This is a rare occurrence, Dan, because it's two of the four teams on my Mark Richt no-fly zone playing each other. The ultimate stay-away game. And as you can see on the camera here, I am rocking the Georgia Tech sweatshirt. So,
oh, wow, look at that.
Great. I'll be rooting in spirit, but in my wallet, I will not be betting on either of these teams.
No, I agree. It's a really hard game to pick.
Yeah, Georgia Tech with their weird wishbone, whatever it is they do, Yes. You don't want to bet on them.
Very Pitt, shady.
With Tino Sinceri in his 47th year.
Yeah.
I don't know who their quarterback is, but I assume it's just Tino Sinceri in disguise.
It is until further notice. We don't
Much
care.
Like that one guy played for Gonzaga for 12 years in different names and jersey numbers.
That's fine, too. No one cared about that.
Right. What's like Adam Morrison and Blake Stepp were actually different people, Dan. We know the truth.
Nope. Same guy.
You going to lay 14.5 when Clemson hosts Syracuse, Dan? That's a tough one.
Yeah. Easy. Lay it. Who cares? It's Syracuse. I know they beat Wake Forest, but...
Dan, so Syracuse has a new quarterback, freshman quarterback, a new freshman wide receiver. They're looking like a pretty decent combo. Reminds me of McNabb-Harrison a little bit.
Yep.
Not really.
Upstate homer.
Yeah. It more reminds me of like Wally Richardson and Freddie Scott.
Yeah, that was a horrible connection. So yeah, that sounds about right.
Okay. Cole Stout versus AJ Long. I don't like that quarterback matchup right there.
No, that's bad.
Let me check the over-under. Oh, 47.5 as expected. Okay. So that's right. Not quite as high. If that was in the 50s, I'd say go under.
Yeah, it's right on.
So I hate this game. It's Syracuse. They don't merit any more discussion. Dan, throw it to you for a West Coast update. So let me read the lines, and then you can just tackle whatever you'd like.
Okay,
we've got UCLA minus 13.5 at Colorado, Oregon State plus 13.5 at Stanford, Arizona minus 3 at Washington State, and USC at Utah. I didn't write a line down for this one. But anything else I'm missing there?
It is USC minus 1 against Utah. First of all, I'd recommend an over bet in the UCLA-Colorado game. Colorado plays shootouts. UCLA has no defense. Yada, yada, yada. That should be an extremely high-scoring game. Oregon State's a weird team. I try to avoid them. I like Arizona. I think they're an underrated team. I really like their quarterback. He's a freshman. He reminds me a lot of Marcus Mariota.
Yeah, so Sanu. He's really good.
So I laid the 3 with them at Washington State, and I think that's it for the Pac-12.
Now, what do you think about Utah? You know, that's a weird place to play. USC's talented, but they've got to go out there at night.
I would take Utah in this spot. That's a super hard place to play, and I would take the home team.
So you're basically saying that Utah will win that game?
Yes.
Dan, give us a rundown of the Pac-12 South. That's gotten really competitive all of a sudden. You got your Sun Devils, UCLA, USC, Utah, Arizona, all really within a game of each other.
Yeah, that's a bunch of great teams. I really like my team here in Arizona State. I think they're really good. They've only had the one loss, and that's at home to UCLA on Thursday Night Football without their starting quarterback. They've won a bunch of hard games already, like at USC and, you know, stuff like that. So I'm going to go Arizona State 1, Arizona 2, and then from there it's a real mess.
So Arizona State should have Taylor Kelly back healthy very soon. So that's a big plus. To me, they're the best team in that division.
They're going to score a lot of points when he comes back, like more than ever, like crazy overs with ASU.
Dan, you were away from the podcast during the great Hail Mary.
I was.
Any thoughts on that?
Thank you for the over. I mean, it was a great week. And, anytime you can get a Hail Mary to hit a bet, it's icing on the cake.
Spillett was hosting that week. He said the same thing. Both of you guys live right by Arizona State and your hometown team. You were more excited about winning the over bet than about the team actually winning.
Yep. It's true. I'm sorry. I'm a gambling degenerate. I can't help myself.
All right. I agree with you on everything. I think Utah's a team to watch. If they can win this week, then they might be a sleeper pick. Otherwise, I go Arizona State to win that division. Dan, bigger difference in father-son talent differential. Barry Sanders Jr., Nick Montana, or Jacob Dylan?
Oh, my God. Nick Montana.
Montana won?
Yeah, because Jacob Dylan's at least put out some sort of music, like on a real like record label. And Who is the first one?
Barry Sanders Jr.
Okay. Yeah, he's still, you know, a running back, and he's very young. It's hard to say. But Nick Montana's played for, like, 9 colleges. I don't know if you saw his most recent awful play where...
What are you talking about, Dan? His big win against UConn?
His big win, however, he was running the hurry-up offense at the end of the first half, and they were out of timeout, so he was like... He had everyone hurry to the line to spike the ball, but it was fourth down. So he's, I swear to God, you can look this up, see Nick Montana spiked the ball on fourth down last week.
I did not watch that. Usually I watch every second and every play of UConn, but that time I missed it.
That would, I think that's the exact words why that's the icing on the cake right there. That's the definition.
They still won that game, by the way. 12-3.
It's a big win. It's a big win right there.
It is a big win. A win and a cover. Obviously a cover against UConn because they're 0-6.
Husky football. Unbelievable.
Oh, man. So I've got Dylan 1, Sanders 2, Nick Montana 3. So same as you, basically. Or right. I guess I have that backwards. But Jacob Dylan is the right. best performing out of those. Then Barry Sanders Jr. I think he's all right, but nowhere near his father. And then Nick Montana. 5 colleges says it all.
Yeah, I agree.
It's a shame. By the way, I don't know if our listeners can hear the thunderstorm that is shaking my house currently.
Northeast, man. That's what happens. You got to move out west. Nothing goes wrong here.
Today in New England, there was no light. Like, the sun just didn't come out. It was just, it rained, and then the clouds were out, and it was just pitch black. And most of my office was on a retreat, so it was only, like, me and one other guy. So the automatic lights kept turning off.
That's horrible.
And there were about 3 times I looked up and thought, like, did I accidentally come to work on a Saturday night?
That's just unbearable. I couldn't take it anymore. Oh, also, I forgot to tell you about my sister's trip to L.A. I think she's going to move to L.A. with her boyfriend or her husband. Sorry.
Oh, that'll be nice. Nice for you. Nice for her. Better weather than where she lived, like Brooklyn or someplace.
Exactly.
Yeah, so... Slightly better weather in LA? Slightly?
Yeah, it's beautiful every day. It's hard out here.
Well, I've never spent significant time there, but I did live in New York. New York's a lot of fun, but it's not someplace you want to live your whole life, I don't think.
No, not at all.
So it's time. All right, Dan. Time to talk about the Big 12. This conference went from being a showdown between Oklahoma and Baylor to a giant clusterfuck.
Yep.
Just give me an overview of where we're at in the conference and who you like going forward.
Oklahoma was overrated as expected. They lost 2 games. TCU's improved more than people have realized because of their offensive coordinator. They score a lot more points than they ever have. And that defense, obviously gave up a ton of points to Baylor, but they can still make some plays. And as far as my Art Briles Baylor Bears, I said on the season preview that I thought that they were going to lose a game or two, and this is what happens. But they're still a fun team, and these are the kind of games you go, ah, shit, that happens at West Virginia in a weird place on the road on a cold day in Morgantown, and you forget about it and you move on. I still think that they are the class of the Big 12, and I think that they'll win out or maybe even lose one more game and still win the Big 12 overall, but they won't play in the playoff. But they'll finish in the top 8-10.
Yeah, Baylor. So there were some things that trouble me about Baylor, the way they played that West Virginia game. They didn't capitalize on some early chances. I mean, they could have been up 3 touchdowns. They kicked a lot of field goals instead. They let West Virginia come back. Their defense hasn't looked very good in a few weeks. I'm with you. I think they're going to lose again, and probably sooner rather than later. Yeah. Oklahoma... I don't know what's up with them. They just have some issues. That, for me, it leaves it. I think we're going to get a sleeper win in this conference, and I'm looking at TCU or Kansas State. Awesome. Now, TCU, as you said, has the defense. They've always had the defense, although that game against Baylor didn't really show it. Now they've got a great offense to boot. Kansas State is sort of now the anomaly in the Big 12. They're the team that plays tough and plays hard defense and sort of runs the ball with a power running game. They can score, but to me, they're a team that needs to get out to an early lead. You don't want to play from behind.
I right. Yeah, you're right.
And their only loss is a tough loss to Auburn by 6 points. So I've been wondering whether Kansas State can take the Big 12.
And they might. It's going to be really interesting to see how it plays out.
Yeah, this is the definition, what we talked about earlier, that it's just too early to predict. Just let it play out. But I'll be curious to see what happens. The Big 12 went from being one of the most boring conferences in terms of, you know, who's going to win, who's going to make a playoff, to now all of a sudden it's one of the most intriguing, wide open, and I can't wait to see what happens.
I agree.
So big games this week. We've got Texas at Kansas State, 7-point line. Texas Tech at TCU, 23-point line. And then West Virginia at Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State's a 1-point favorite.
Yeah. I like Oklahoma State in a pick 'em there. West Virginia is in a prime spot for letdown, flying, you know, halfway across the country there.
People don't understand what a big deal it is for Baylor to go to West Virginia. I mean, West Virginia geographically doesn't really belong in the Big 12, and it's a hell of a flight. And first off, I'm just making this up, but I'm pretty sure, you know, you can't just fly to West Virginia. You have to fly to, you know, D.C. or Virginia or someplace and then, you know, take a bus or some shit like that. Like, probably. I think it's a tough trip. You have to ride a donkey at some point to get out there.
It's not easy.
Vice versa for West Virginia going out to Oklahoma State. You know, that's a tough trip and a letdown game. I think Oklahoma State probably takes that one.
Yeah, I agree.
TCU will win. I don't know about 23, though.
Me neither. I wouldn't lay that.
No, to me, that's too much between two, you know, respectable Power 5 conference teams.
Yeah.
And then Kansas State, you know, 7 against Texas at home. I think I would lay the 7 in that game. I would like it a lot more if it were 6.5.
Same here.
Okay. That's all the games on the schedule, Dan. Is there anything else you want to talk about in terms of, you know, games or upset picks or lines?
Not really. It's kind of a quiet week, you know, and that's to be expected. We came off of a couple crazy weeks, and next week's really good, really, really good, but which we'll, you know, get into next week. So this week, you know, kind of take it easy. You know, fire your Ohio State, your East Carolina, your over in the Auburn game. I wouldn't go too crazy this week. I would kind of be a little bit conservative. I think it's hard. I think it's a hard week.
All right, Dan, we had planned something to do at the end of the show, but first I want to do your 4-team teaser.
Absolutely.
It's been way too long. The fans have been clamoring. All right. Dan Partridge's Light Your Money on Fire 4-team tease of the week.
That is correct. FYI, over the 2 weeks where I was absent, I went 1-1 on the teaser. So that brings me to 2-2.
No, Dan, if you don't say it on the air, it doesn't count.
Oh, man. But I'm telling you that I won one, but I lost one, and that's fair.
Yeah, you could just be making shit up.
I didn't go 0-2.
Hey, I believe you, but America needs more evidence.
All right, America. Fuck off. Okay, here we go. This
so,
week.
So you're 1-1 on the year, I believe. Is that correct?
Okay,
or are you 1-2?
We are 1-1. 1-1. Here we go. This is my 4-team 13-point tease where you have to get all 4 right to win. And this week we have Ohio State minus a 0.5 point at Penn State. How do you like that one, Z, right off the bat?
That's a good bet, Dan. I like that one a lot.
How is that not coming in? Tell me right.
Why don't you do your 4-team teaser, and then I'll do my America's favorite new segment, Tom Z Tells Dan P How He's Going to Lose His 4-team teaser.
Son of a bitch. Here we go. Okay, step 1, Ohio State minus a 0.5 point. Step 2, East Carolina. Tease that down to minus 15 against UConn. Come on, that's coming in.
Mm-hmm.
3. Over in the South Carolina Auburn game, we moved that 65 down to 52, so over 52 in that game. And the final play of the night, how could I not play these guys? It's going to be Ole Miss plus 9.5 at LSU.
Wow. Well, some weeks are better than other with the 4-team tees, and I think this is one of your good ones.
Okay.
Now, East Carolina over UConn. I obviously am not going to contradict that one. Ohio State is my lock of the week at 14, so I think at a half a point, you're looking pretty good. Ole Miss getting 9 against LSU, that's a really nice bet. So if you're going to lose, and I think the last one's maybe, you know, in your favor, but it is, there is a chance. It's going to have to be, what is it, 52 point over under.
Yeah.
Auburn runs the ball, knowing that they're going to beat South Carolina no matter what they do, saving their energy for the bigger, badder teams of the SEC West. Auburn wins convincingly, but not overwhelmingly, 32-17.
I don't like it.
I don't love it, but it's my duty on this podcast to tell you how you're wrong.
It's coming in.
I don't make the rules. Actually, I do make the rules, but I follow them as well.
Tony, it's coming in.
All right. Well, Dan, from that happy note, we've got to go on to a sadder note.
Yes.
We have to end the podcast with a eulogy. I've got some music queued up here. Let's see if this is playing. There we go. Dan, it's with a heavy heart that we say goodbye to the Will Muschamp era at Florida. It was a fun time, starting off at 11-2 in a Sugar Bowl loss to Louisville. But from there, it careened off the rails with a 4-8 season last year. 4-7 season last year, I don't know. Shitty season last year.
Or
the country had hope. Hope that Will Muschamp would turn things around, getting his quarterback Jeff Driscoll back for the 2014 season. But 'twas not to be. As it turns out, Jeff Driscoll is not good. And Will Muschamp only knows defense and does not know how to run an offense. So a plethora of talented players at Florida have been wasting away in what will be another losing non-bowl season. Dan, would you like to add anything?
First off, Z, that was absolutely beautiful. I think that was the high mark of the two-year podcast right there. It doesn't get any better than that, folks.
I try. I came prepared 2 songs this week.
I know. That is, I believe, 2 more songs than we've ever played on the podcast.
Yeah, that's 2 more chances to get our shit taken down off of iTunes or get sued for copyright infringement.
I live close to Mexico, and I'm not concerned. Okay, so, Mr. Muschamp, normally in this segment I would comment about how I don't like you as a coach and call you maybe a hick or some other terms like that that probably aren't appropriate. But I am going to actually say that this isn't your fault, Muschamp. This is the curse of the 2008-2009 Florida Gators rearing its ugly head once again. You can blame Aaron Hernandez, Riley Cooper, Percy Harvin, by the way, in the news this week for giving people black eyes.
New addition to the Aaron Hernandez curse. He wasn't on the list of cursed players, was he?
No, he wasn't. Now he is now.
New addition. We're going to have to start a website. There's too many names to remember.
Mike Pouncey, Maurice Pouncey, Jordan Reed, endless players, Tim Tebow. And the curse goes on. So
wait, how is Tebow cursed? He didn't have a great career in the NFL, but you know, he's an announcer now and he's on Good Morning America. That's pretty solid.
He won a Heisman, won a couple national titles, got drafted in the first round, and he's out of professional football. I would say he's cursed.
Okay. Yeah. You forget he's drafted in the first round. Doesn't seem right in hindsight.
First round pick quarterback out of the NFL after like 3 years. He's cursed. The whole team's cursed. I don't know what Florida can do to alleviate the curse. It's bad. It's really bad.
I think we decided Aaron Hernandez has to either be put to death, like get the chair, or he has to come back and like run a route in reverse. Like, isn't that how, like when you get kicked by a mule and you lose your brain power, you have to have like a house fall on you to knock it back into place. That's what I've learned from TV. If you get, you know, hit in the head and something goes wrong, you need to get hit in the head hard again. That fixes it.
The Aaron Hernandez curse is real. And
so he needs to like come back and coach for Florida.
Something. I don't know. Or he's got to be, you know, convicted and sentenced to life in jail or something. But until that happens, Florida's finished.
What happens if he gets off? Are they just done forever?
Yeah, he can't play in the NFL anymore.
No, I don't mean him. I mean the University of Florida.
I'm not
obviously
sure.
His career is over, Dan. I don't think the Buffalo Bills are going to take a waiver on Hernandez.
Never know. Cowboys might need a tight end. All right, I think that's it for this week.
Yeah, so I have a suggestion for Florida. First off, we didn't talk about this. Florida, one of the big names being tossed around, Dan, is your man out in Arizona, Rich Rod.
He's a great hire, apparently. He turned around Arizona. They're really good. Why not?
Yeah, he's exciting. He's Spurrier-esque, is what people are saying.
Yeah.
I would say, as always, when you have a coaching vacancy, offer $15 million a year to Art Briles.
Yep.
If he says no, then look at some of the other big names, maybe an NFL guy. If they say no and you need like a bargain hire, I am a big fan of David Cutcliffe at Duke. Look what he's doing again this year.
That's a valid point.
So he would be my sleeper coach pick. But you're always best off if you're Florida or Michigan. Just go out and spend a lot of money and get a really good guy.
That's fair.
Sumlin, Briles. I doubt those guys would go, but you should just offer them $10 million and try it.
I agree.
Anything else you want to add?
No, I think I'm good. Enjoy the games this week, everyone. Look forward to next week. It's a big week.
All right, people. That's it. Take the point.